This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Health News Digest on the bigger picture. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. It's The Bigger Picture. I'm Tina Camilla. Joining me for Health News Digest this week is a very special guest, a frequent panelist on A Bit of Culture, Lee Chu Lin. And I'll tell you why Lin is here with me today. We are discussing public figures and public health. And there's really no one I know who is more cultured and who's also available to come in on the show and talk about pop culture and public health.
It's the second one that's more important, I think.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
All right. So today I want to draw our attention to Jimmy Kimmel's tearful monologue about his newborn son's open heart surgery. And then we're also going to talk about the British royal family and what they're doing with mental health awareness. And I'm curious to know what you think about all of that, Lin. So that's what we have for the rest of the hour as we discuss if public figures help or harm public health. BFM 89.9. Welcome back. It's Health News Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Tina Camilla. My guest is Lee Chu Lin. Hello.
Hello.
Today we are exploring the role of celebrities in public health campaigns. Do they cause more harm than good? Let's start with Jimmy Kimmel.
About something that happened to our family last week. I try not to get emotional, but it was a scary story. A little over a week ago on Friday, April 21st, my wife gave birth to a boy. And when a very attentive nurse was checking him out and heard a murmur in his heart, which is common with newborn babies, but she also noticed he was a bit purple, which is not common. So she asked me to come with her, and my wife and I assumed it would be nothing. Our daughter had a heart murmur, too, and we didn't notice that he wasn't the color he was supposed to be. So now more doctors and nurses and equipment come in, and it's a terrifying thing. You know, my wife is back in the recovery room. She has no idea what's going on. And I'm standing in the middle of a lot of very worried-looking people, kind of like right now, who are trying to figure out what the problem is. And it's Friday night, and so they call a pediatric cardiologist who, when they called him, was picking his mother up from the airport. Luckily, her plane was not delayed because he got to the hospital very quickly. They did an echocardiogram and found that Billy was born with a heart disease, something called tetralogy of Fallot with pulmonary atresia. It's hard to explain. Basically, the pulmonary valve was completely blocked, and he has a hole in the wall between the left and right sides of his heart, where we decided to take him to Children's Hospital, where there's a world-renowned cardiac surgeon who is by all accounts, a genius. His name is Dr. Vaughn Starnes. So we put the baby in an ambulance to Children's Hospital, Los Angeles. And on Monday morning, Dr. Starnes opened his chest and fixed one of the two defects in his heart. And he opened the valve and the operation was a success. It was the longest 3 hours of my life.
So that happened. Yeah, so that kind of got a lot of traction when it occurred, I think. It was covered pretty widely, a whole bunch of, you know, everything from sort of proper news outlets to blogs to social media kind of lit up with that story. And I think that happened because it's such a touch point in the United States right now with the Health Care Act repeal, with all these different things happening. It's understandable that that was such a huge moment. I don't know. I'm going to be honest, I read all the think pieces about it and did not watch the clip.
Ah.
I wasn't moved to do it, partly because I am not a Jimmy Kimmel person myself. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, it just kind of didn't touch me in that same way. But I thought that he made, you know, salient appeals. He didn't make it too political, which I guess other people would have. But he made it very personal. It was very much about his son, his family. How did you feel about it?
I didn't feel much sympathy for him. I did watch the full clip. I think it was like a 10-minute monologue or something.
Yes.
It was much longer. I mean, I think he went on to talk about how it is very important to have healthcare coverage for the millions of Americans who now have lost that, right? One of the comments on the YouTube clip I read was, another out-of-touch celebrity bringing politics into a place it doesn't belong. That was what it said. I think that's a little bit harsh. I don't think that he is an out-of-touch celebrity because that was his personal experience. And I'm pretty sure that it was horrifying for any parent. You have a newborn child who suddenly has to go for an emergency open heart surgery. And he's going to need, I think, another one a few months later and then later on in his teenage years to replace the valves. But I don't know. I feel like it is a little bit, even with his monologue, that little snippet, was tinged with a little bit of privilege. The best pediatrician, the best neonatal specialist, that sort of stuff.
I guess, so it depends here on what you think of the message, right? Because I thought his message was salient in terms of it being addressed to other parents who may be like him, who may have a child, who may be sideswiped by a disease they didn't see coming, who may have these unexpected costs accrue right after the birth of their child, and extending from that to anything, right? Like, you could be sideswiped by a health problem really at any time, which Health and Living, I think, has made perfectly clear, unfortunately, for all the hypochondriacs. But I had to separate the messenger from the message. Because, yes, he could probably have afforded all that care and more for 10 children, you know, without necessarily having the insurance. The point he was making is nobody should have to have been in his position. I think many people are familiar with that feeling of being powerless within the healthcare system. And I think he's saying, imagine if you were that and you didn't have my resources. Now, that didn't come out in the story. That needs to be passed after, which is why I read the think pieces as opposed to listen to him speak. But I think it landed in the United States. Jimmy Kimmel is somebody who got into a bit of hot water over that Oscars joke, if you recall, where he made fun of Mahershala Ali's name repeatedly, where he implied that the only people who have normal names are people like Jimmy or his son, Billy, you know, sort of these very, I guess, all-American white names. But I think in this instance, he appeals to those people. And as we've seen in politics in America right now, those people are the ones, that's the demographic that's holding the cards. So I think in that sense, if you pass it and pass it and pass it, then his appeal makes sense.
When this story came out, I kind of regretted not touching on Michael Bublé's son's brain cancer treatment. That happened sometime last year. And I wanted to do that for a Health News Digest piece, but I decided not to. And then I realized that, you know, this is another opportunity to bring out a point where, you know, these are people who, they have the luxury to put their careers on hold. Like Michael Bublé, it was Christmas time, and that's normally when he's fully booked. He's doing
Bublé time. Yeah. Yeah.
And he decided, okay, this year I'm not going to do it because my son has brain cancer. He needs to go for treatment. And they were jetting across everywhere. I think his wife is Argentinian or South American. And they were just flying in and out of the country for treatments. And they can afford that. They have the luxury to put everything on hold to get the best treatment. And so I feel like it's so hard for me to feel a lot of sympathy for them.
I don't think you have to feel a lot of sympathy for them in order to appreciate the message that they're trying to convey. For example, Jimmy Kimmel, I agree with you that there is a certain element of privilege at play. The fact that he can say the best cardiologist, you know, who has access to that person? But that doesn't, for me, take away from his fundamental message that no parent should have to watch their child die because they can't afford healthcare, which was his central message amidst all of it. I don't view it as a play for sympathy. I don't think he was expecting sympathy. I think he viewed it as, this happened to me and I need to talk about it. I need to use my platform and do something about it. We've spoken before on Health and Living also about one of the drivers for men specifically to seek out healthcare, and one of those main drivers is something needs to happen first. Unfortunately, when it comes to pre-screenings, when it comes to going for their annual checkups, men are not always the best before something happens either to them or to somebody very close to them. And I think that's what we're seeing here a little bit as well. You know, Jimmy Kimmel, by and large, has not been a political mainstay. He is no Seth Meyers. He is no John Oliver. He's no Stephen Colbert. He is Jimmy Kimmel. He does that sort of middle of the road, semi-snarky, you know, entertainment, humorous thing very well. But now something has happened to him personally. And yes, you can snark on the fact that he's a rich white man. But he then went on to say, okay, I will use my privileged position to take this stance that I've not previously taken and talk about this.
Was it right for him to be using his platform, that is a relatively non-political platform, to be putting out that message?
I think through the prism of a personal story, it changes things. Because yes, he spoke about Obamacare, about the Affordable Care Act, but it was in the form of, I see now why it's so important. You know, he didn't slam, say, Paul Ryan on a personal basis. You know, neither did he turn Obama into God. You know, he just spoke about how important the act was. I think it's a fine balancing act, especially for somebody who, as I said, has been very middle of the road. Not quite Jimmy Fallon, but certainly not John Oliver. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think in that sense, it wasn't inappropriate. I can't speak to whether it was the best moment to do anything. Politically, I'm more on his end of the spectrum than I would be for someone else. So I'm biased in that sense, but I do think it was an important personal story to tell.
I see what you mean.
Do you, though? You sound unconvinced.
I just feel uneasy with him being so... I mean, like you said, something really terrible happened to him, and then he's making it very out there, like his stand about healthcare policy in the US and all of that. I don't know, in terms of appropriateness, whether I can kind of feel comfortable with how he did it.
I think people need to speak to the everyman. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the cultural war happening in the United States, and that's partly happening because people who see themselves as the everyman, I mean, after all, we are all everymen and women, but people who view themselves as the everyman feel very threatened. And so to have another everyman speak in that sense, not as an expert, not as somebody who had a strong political view, but as someone who had their view affected by a personal story, I think that is very affecting. Mm-hmm. And that can only be a good thing on balance.
Okay. We're not done yet. We'll bring in the British royal family into the discussion. That's up next, BFM 89.9. Hello again. It's the Health News Digest segment on The Bigger Picture. My name is Tina Carmelia. Joining me this week to discuss the intersection of pop culture and public health is a bit of culture panelist and former Bigger Picture presenter Lee Chui Lin.
Hello.
So we were earlier discussing about Jimmy Kimmel and his terrifying three-hour ordeal as his newborn son had to undergo emergency open heart surgery. I'm so sorry.
That sounded terrible. You're like, ooh, three-hour ordeal. It was an ordeal for him.
Yes, I know. I should be more compassionate. I feel like I'm giving him too much. Yeah, it was a horrible thing that he went through. I'm glad that everything turned out okay after the surgery. But now let's move over to the other side of the Atlantic Ocean. Let's go and visit the British royal family, the younger members at least, and their mental health campaign called Heads Together.
Both of us have always been open to each other, saying, you know, we've never really talked about it. We've never really talked about losing a mum at such a young age. And when you speak to other people's families and little kids and stuff, you think, wow, you know, I don't want them to have to go through the same thing. So you want to, with a little bit of experience, you want to help as much as you can and try and empower them to have that conversation and to be brave enough for themselves to talk about it at a young age rather than bottling it up for far too long.
Considering everything that you boys obviously sadly went through and the trauma that you experienced, you know, I do, particularly with the work within early intervention and things like that I've been doing in the early years, I do think it's incredible how strong and how you've been able to cope, really. And I put that down to your really early years, childhood experience, but also the relationship that you've got. You're amazingly close.
Yeah.
And yes, you know, you know, and some families sadly aren't as lucky as you guys have been, and being able to share things.
But we have been brought closer because of the circumstances as well. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, you are uniquely bonded because of what we've been through.
Yeah.
But, you know, even Harry and I, over the years, have not talked enough about, you know, our mother. You know, we've...
Never enough.
Has doing this campaign sort of made you realise that?
I think so. I always thought to myself, you know, what's the point in bringing up the past? What's the point in bringing up something that's only going to make you sad? It ain't going to change it. It ain't going to bring her back. And when you start thinking like that, it can be really damaging. And you always said to me, you said, you know, you've got to sit down and think about those memories. But for me, it was like, don't want to think about it.
Yeah, but it's, I think what's happened with us and must happen with others as well is that you have to prioritise your mental health.
Yeah.
You have to say to yourself at some point, because it's very easy to run away from it, you know, to walk away from it and avoid it the whole time. Someone has to take the lead and has to be brave enough to force that conversation.
It's so nice to hear the stiff upper lip wavering a bit. I mean, just a bit.
Yeah, so that was Prince William, his wife Kate Middleton, and his brother Prince Harry talking about, I think they were just opening up about having conversation around their mother's death. That was 20 years ago.
1997.
Yeah, so 20 years ago. And they're only now, I think only in the past year or so, that they started publicly addressing how they felt about what had happened. It was a very public affair. And they were so young. I was very young too.
Yeah.
But it affected me. I was so upset when it happened.
I mean, they were, I guess, a little bit older than me when it happened. And it was just horrendous because it suddenly brings home to you the idea that your parents can die. Yeah. You know, if Princess Diana can die, your parents can certainly go any minute. But I think it's great what they're doing. I think it's interesting that, as with most things when it comes to the royal family, the rollout is very planned. It's very prepared. So you've been seeing the sort of mental health talk inform a lot of the other work that they've been doing. They've been talking about how, for example, going to Paris is hard for Prince William. You know, there's been the sort of, it permeates things, and then they actually talk about it in the clip. You know, they were kind of sitting in a
garden,
in a meadow or something. Yeah, and talking about it. But I think that meadow video is as important as just dropping it into interviews, into formal statements, into what is for them everyday life. You know, for us, it's extraordinary, but for them, it's just what they do. And I think it's important to have those mentions, and that's what they've been doing, and that's clever.
I'm happy that they're talking about it. It's really interesting to have an insight into how they feel and how they think. And again, I don't know if I have a lot of sympathy, but I really appreciate it. I thought it was, when I saw the video, when it came out on my Facebook feed, I liked it. I mean, I watched the whole thing and I liked it because I thought that this is not something I would imagine a royal family to be doing.
You still don't see Prince Charles doing it.
Correct, yeah. He's still very old-fashioned traditionalist in his royal role. Yeah.
And even with that said, he's had a number of biographies come out which have talked about his early experiences with distant parents, with bullying, with and then, you know, with having an affair, the loss of his wife, his relationship failings. So he'll talk about it in that setting, you know, where it's very controlled and there's no sort of feedback. But what they are doing, the young royals, because like us, they grew up half in an age of old-fashioned books and you talk about things a certain way. Television is sort of the main form of media, radio, and half in Facebook, Instagram, Google. And I think that they recognize that there has to be a conversation. Like, it doesn't work for them to come out and say, hello, my name is Prince William, and I sometimes have depression, end of story. You know, he needs to talk about it and in talking about it, provide avenues for others to talk about it, because that's the whole purpose, right? I mean, if you're just out there saying something, you might as well just tell the Daily Mail and let them run with it,
right?
You know, but if what you're doing is trying to facilitate a conversation, if not necessarily with you, because you're the future king of England, you know, but with somebody. The idea is, hey, grab your brother, grab your wife, find a nice patch of grass and, you know, maybe talk about things.
And it's interesting you brought up Prince Charles because
he's so damaged. I'm making a huge psychological claim on the radio. But no, I mean, I take that back. But yeah, I mean, he's very interesting in terms of his personality.
But his writings are very clinical. It's lacking that touch. I don't know what kind of touch I'm trying to look for, but I
think the kind of touch that involves people's voices, you know, them actually, you can see their faces when they're talking about trauma. I don't think we should underestimate the kinds of cues that they're giving out by actually sitting down and letting you see their vulnerability. You know, it's one thing to write. That has a remove to it. I'm not saying that this wasn't edited or wasn't perfectly staged and curated. Of course it was. But the point is, you can see them and hear them.
Mm. And so, speaking of Prince Charles and his parenting or distant parenting, it's interesting because Kate also mentioned a little bit about what it's like to be a first-time parent. And I don't know, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I think it's a little bit of a mention about postpartum depression or maybe a tinge of it. Let's hear it.
Because you often speak, don't you, about the emotional changes that sort of even you've gone through. And I think a lot of parents hopefully can, I suppose, identify with that. in that, you know, having a child, particularly your first child, is such a sort of life-changing moment. Nothing can really prepare you for that. Remember the first few days with little George, you know, you have no idea really what you're doing. No matter how many books you read, nothing can prepare you for it.
There's no rule book, there's no training that teaches you how to do it. You just have to learn from previous generations and hope that you can translate it into what, you know, what you want to do.
You remember our friend Anglesey, so we'd had a couple of weeks of sort of family support, and then you were keen to get back to your work, and I was like, no, I'll come with you, of course, yeah. So we scooted off back to Anglesey with George. Those first few weeks, you know, were...
Steep learning curve.
A steep learning curve, massively.
You know, when you have children, it really does put your own emotions and your own life into perspective, and it's been very, very interesting understanding, you know, why I get so upset about some things or why some things affect me. You know, I thought I was quite, you know, fairly sort of straight down the line, but I'm actually quite, I feel quite a lot more than I used to.
Do you feel that particularly with the work that with the air ambulance? Do you
feel? Yeah, I feel like I take on a lot of the family cases with me, take them home, which I find quite hard. And luckily, we've got a good support network at work, and just talking about it amongst all of us and being able to, you know, understand the process and hear, you know, good news and bad news, but follow some of these cases through to the end is quite important.
And it's not just the individual, is it? It has such an effect.
Such an effect.
On the rest of the family?
Precisely. Family, friends, everyone that cares about you. So you've got that one individual in the middle. And then no one really, especially with the veterans piece as well, all the focus always seems to be on the individual with the injuries.
Exactly.
If it's physical injuries, then it's supposedly easier because you can see those injuries. Where if it's hidden wounds, then no one can see that, but still that person is the focus. But the effect that that has on them, their family and their friends is huge because people care about you.
Yeah.
But that's part of the healing process, and it's part of sharing your problems to halve them and to make them better with someone you trust and someone you know is going to help you.
You know how I mentioned how these celebrities or public figures, they don't know what it's like to be us with no such luxury that they have. I think at the same time, I also don't understand what it's like to be them, to be a prince and an air ambulance pilot and a new father.
I think that my big thing about the royals talking about it is that if you get away from, I mean, if you can kind of quell the voice of judgment that naturally comes up when we're talking about people who are, they're not even 1%. I don't know what percentage they are because they're royal and they're very rich and they're very removed. If you quell that and shut that voice up that says they have nannies, they have multiple houses, they have whatever, I think the important message here is that it can happen to anyone, which is one of those big central tenets, right, of mental health communication, that you should not feel that anybody can be exempt from depression or anxiety or compulsive behaviors or any other thing that would fall under that category of mental health. And the fact that they talk about it and you might recognize yourself in it, you might think, well, yes, I also had a lot of difficulty postpartum. I also struggled without family support. I also have seen families that have suffered a blow to, you know, one member and have it radiate out. I think we've all seen that, maybe not in the same capacity. But the point is, there is a level of empathy there that was nice to hear, nice to watch.
I kind of feel a little bit warm. It could be the Kate Middleton touch to it. It's just, I found her mostly facilitating the conversation between the brothers in some way.
I think so, perhaps. But that might come from the fact that she was not born a royal. You know, you're not born with all these innate expectations that you don't talk about these things. Some things we just put away. You have to not just be yourself for yourself. You have to be yourself for the palace, for the country. She wasn't born with those expectations. They've been hoisted upon her. And actually, if you look at the way the boys, I don't call the princes, have conducted their serious romances, Prince William, if I recall correctly, was very, very firm about Kate Middleton having some measure of protection from journalists, from royal expectations, from all the kinds of pressures that he knew his mother had to face. And Prince Harry, as we saw, I think late last year, was it? Just kind of went all out the minute it was revealed that he's seeing Meghan Markle. You know, it's like, racism, disgusting, leave her alone. And so they are aware of it. I mean, perhaps they've not spoken about it before, but I certainly don't think that they were never aware, very, very aware of the expectations of or the pressures of marrying into the family or therefore of being in their role, right? Because basically what's happening is you're bringing somebody in to be your partner on that level. So they know the pressures of their level. They just maybe haven't spoken about it before.
And the thing is, Kate has, she's got a pristine reputation. But Prince William also teamed up with Lady Gaga as part of this campaign. And Lady Gaga is kind of, well, you like her, you don't. I like her.
Hello, Prince William.
Hello, Lady Gaga.
Good morning. Well, it's afternoon there.
Yeah, exactly. Good morning, good afternoon.
It is, and I am so grateful to speak to you. I am a very big fan of what you've done with Heads Together and hashtag Okay to Say, the videos with Annie and Joe, the beautiful films that you've made with the Heads Together campaign. They told beautiful stories, and it reminded me how much my mental health changed my life.
It's interesting to see and hear from you how much having that conversation or having that ability to speak to someone really made a difference to you. And I think for me, the little bits that I've learned so far about mental health is very much the case of, you know, it's okay to have this conversation. It's really important to have this conversation and that you won't be judged. It's so important to break open that fear and that taboo, which is it's only going to lead to more problems down the line. Everybody has mental health and that we shouldn't be ashamed of it. And that just having a conversation with a friend or family member can really make such a difference.
Even though it was hard, it was the best thing that could come out of my mental illness was to share it with other people and let, you know, our generation as well as other generations know that if you are feeling not well in your mind, that you're not alone.
So a little bit of context. Lady Gaga recently acknowledged that she suffered from PTSD after being sexually assaulted when she was 19. But what do you think? Is this elitist snobbery at its finest?
You are so difficult to please.
I'm just saying what people are thinking. I'm sure that
some people, maybe.
And it has to be said.
Yes. And I'm not belittling your opinion, but I don't think that this necessarily needs to appeal to some people. And I think there it is, right? It has to appeal to a lot of people. And Lady Gaga has that huge existing fan base. It comes down to credibility. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have a trauma underpinning your mental health problems. I mean, in all these discussions, we've got some, except for Kate Middleton, someone has undergone a trauma and now they're talking about how that's impacted their life. But as we know, that's not how mental health works. You can have depression without trauma. You can't have PTSD without trauma, but you can have anxiety. You can have all these other things that come along. But what they do have is credibility. They have that this is not something that I've just started talking about now. This is not something that I'm, you know, piggybacking on. This is something I have experienced in my life. I have spoken about it before, and I'm speaking about it now in the hopes that it will assist others. And yes, it's elite. I mean, it's elitist only insofar as they are the elite. But these are the people whom our society looks up to now. So you can argue with that and try to change that, or you can try and use that for good. You brought up Lady Gaga. I was thinking of Selena Gomez, whom I'm not necessarily a fan of.
I am.
Okay, so I haven't listened to any of her music. I know who she is. I have literally never seen her work. I haven't seen her, you know, act in anything or sing in anything. I don't know her in that sense. But I do think it's great that somebody who has, I think still now, the most Instagram followers of all time, to see her just really going out there and talking about that.
I think it's safe to say that most of you know a lot of my life, whether I liked it or not. And I had to stop because I had everything and I was absolutely broken inside. And I kept it all together enough to where I would never let you down, but I kept it too much together to where I let myself down. I don't want to see your bodies on Instagram. I want to see what's in here. I'm not trying to get validation, nor do I need it anymore. All I can say from the bottom of my heart is I am so grateful that I have the opportunity to be able to share what I love every single day with people that I love. And I have to say thank you so much to my fans, because you guys are so damn loyal, and I don't know what I did to deserve you. But if you are broken, you do not have to stay broken. And if that's anything, whether you respect me or not, that's one thing you should know about me, is I care about people, and thank you so much for this.
She took a break from social media, saying that she needed to take care of herself. Since coming back to social media, in all her interviews, there's been a strong thread of self-care, of mental health coming through. And I think that it's important to have these touchstones for different people. You know, she might appeal to younger people and validate some of that angst, validate some of that sense that maybe something really isn't right. This isn't just regular, you know, teenage blues. This might be something more. You have Lady Gaga, who hits a different segment. You've got the royals, who fascinate people worldwide. I mean, you can have issues with the monarchy. I certainly do. But they are public figures who are using it for good.
You mentioned credibility, and I did a quick search just before this, and the British Medical Journal in 2013 published a study titled Following Celebrities' Medical Advice, a Meta-Narrative Analysis.
Great title.
Yeah. But what it essentially concluded was that celebrity endorsements act as a signal of credibility. Marketing studies show celebrities transfer desirable attributes to products. So things like, you know, mental health and how stigmatized it is now is becoming a lot less stigmatized, and more you can openly have conversations about it. Psychological studies show that people are classically conditioned to react positively to advice of celebrities, and sociology helps explain the spread of celebrity medical advice as a contagion that diffuses through people's desire to acquire celebrities' social capital.
Hmm.
So they aspire to be like them by reacting positively to the messages that they are putting out there.
That's disheartening. You know, that's disheartening on a personal level, but on a social communication level, I think that's great. You know, it works out for health communication. It doesn't work out so much in terms of why children, why? But, you know, I mean, whatever works at this point. I think that mental health has been stigmatized for so long. I know it seems, I really wanted to get through this conversation without bringing her up, but Angelina Jolie, well, I mean, here we are, but she is one of the most beautiful women on earth, right? I mean, widely regarded as. And she's one of the most widely sexualized women on earth, or at least in her heyday, her Lara Croft heyday, she was. And I think it's something to say that she had her breasts cut off. I think that means something, you know, not even just in terms of getting, we've talked about how maybe the genetic testing thing backfired, but
yeah. I have some statistics.
Ah, okay.
The Angelina Jolie effect led to an estimated 4,500 additional genetic tests performed at a cost of $13.5 million, but not an increase in breast cancer cases.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? But I'm talking about stigma, not hard numbers. Those are problematic. We've talked about that on the show. But in terms of destigmatizing cancer, and specifically a cancer that is not exclusively female, but thought of as exclusively female, and her talking about how she basically had to cut out all her female signifiers, you know, all her feminine signifiers. She basically scooped out her womb. She cut off her breasts. You know, you really can't get more vivid than that. As a woman, I find that difficult to deal with. And I imagine that if I were going through something similar, it would help me. It helps to destigmatize the fact that, look, you can have all these things happen to you, and then you rediscover, you kind of find your own path after. You don't necessarily have to follow in Angelina Jolie's path, but if people feel that having her path laid out in front of them helps, I don't think that's such a bad thing.
I think I will conclude with the conclusion from the researchers of that study that I was quoting just now, that a better understanding of celebrity can empower health professionals to take this phenomenon seriously and use patient encounters to educate the public about sources of health information and their trustworthiness.
That's fair. Are you going to be better about listening to celebrity messages without reeling against the snobbery?
I think it's important also to play the devil's advocate in situations like this. And because my first thoughts were those, but at the same time, when I think through it and I start to self-rationalize, I see where you're coming from. But I also see the importance of questioning it so that it's being addressed openly and publicly. And like having conversations like this, I think helps move the conversation forward. All right. Thank you so much for joining me today, Lynn.
Thank you.
That was Lee Chui Lin. I'm Tina Camilla. This has been the Health News Digest segment on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.